Sean. So, you were just mentioning to me, or asking me, I guess, what kind of computer one might look into for a virtual reality setup.
If one wanted to escape from non-virtual reality, what would one need to purchase in order to do so?
Well, it depends on who you ask. If you ask Elon Musk, he'll tell you that you are already not in real reality. You are already in a virtual reality, by all likelihood.
That's true. You know what? I think I've thought about that quite a bit. I've heard it, I've heard people mention that a few times, and I have no feelings towards it one way or the other. I think a lot of people feel very strange after considering that fact, but I don't have many feelings about it. I guess I've accepted that it could be, it's plausible. And if that is the case, then no one's showed up to deliver me a pill yet, so I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, I mean, if it's true, it doesn't really affect. There's not much I can do about it either way.
No.
It just is, or isn't.
Yeah. But yeah. Well, I've been wanting to play Microcosm and other things. I played, so my brother has a PSVR and I played that. And it was cool. I played the Star Wars one. And so yeah, I kind of want to check it out. I've been looking at PSVR, but I've kind of wanted a PC for a little bit. I don't know. Growing up, I had one. I've always had a PC. I didn't switch to Mac until I started college, and I always thought they were fun. I like playing with Linux a lot, and granted, I could do that with my Mac machine. I would rather just work on my Mac machine and not jack stuff up on accident, not burn my hard drive out on accident,
Sure.
installing distros and things. So, yeah, I guess VMs kind of nullify that argument, but that's neither here nor there.
It's kind of nice for a lot of things to have that physical actual box, though. I mean, and obviously for if you want to do any sort of gaming, virtual machines don't really cut it.
No, they don't. I really would just want to play Age of Empires. I keep the Steam tab open.
Well, you can do that on Windows.
I could.
I would play Age of Empires if you got a PC.
I would never stop playing it.
It's a good game.
I've been thinking about it, so I don't really know. I've been out of the game for so long. I don't know what kind of PC to buy. I don't know what parts to buy. It seems like people just buy their own parts these days. Unless you're buying a laptop, obviously, then you would find some sort of manufacturer. But I'm so used to Apple. Like, if I want a new computer, I just pick whatever one they have pre-selected for me to use. They know what I need better than I do. So I just say, here's my money and give me something that I can work on. And that's what they do.
Sure. So I'm kind of the same as you, where I grew up using PCs, and that was just all I ever had, all I learned on. And then I'm probably like a decade into switching over to Macs. And during that time, for the vast majority of it, I didn't have any PCs, or if I did, it was just like being used as a media server or something and stuffed in a closet, or for some like home theater kind of thing. Never as like an actual workstation that I used.
Sure.
But then, yeah, last year I played with the Vive for a little bit because we got one at Imagix actually, and that was the first place I played with any sort of VR thing, and it blew me away, and I was like, man, this seems like something I should keep an eye on. And so I actually, like a few weeks later, I walked down to there was this place, it's called Central Computer, like a block away from Imagix in San Francisco. I walked in there. It's one of the few remaining computer parts stores. It's super cool though. You go in and they just have a bunch of processors, a bunch of graphics cards, all sorts of stuff. And I just grabbed a bunch of parts. I kind of, did some research beforehand, grabbed a bunch of parts, took it home that night and assembled it. It's really fun. It's been very interesting having a Windows box again. I feel like I'm learning a lot about the modern Windows ecosystem, and it's just kind of good to, stay aware of what the current tech is.
Is it super different? Like I mean, so the last time I used Windows was I was probably 19, and other than that, I'm just using what's it called? Browser Stack? Yeah, I use Browser Stack to test things. But that's literally the last time I used a PC was I was 19 years old.
I think one of the most striking things going back to Windows after such a long time away is just, man, they still really don't make keyboard shortcuts easy. That's the most surprising thing to me is how much of a pain it is to have good keyboard shortcuts in Windows. I mean, for one, you have an entire meta key gone because it's the Windows key, and so it's just bound to those Windows native shortcuts. which is pretty unfortunate. It's just not great. And there's just not a lot of customization or, and hotkeys aren't really exposed nicely either in the UI in a lot of times. So that's a kind of a bummer. Overall, it feels a lot more stable than the last time I used Windows, though, I'd have to say. And things work. It's definitely, I mean, it's come a long way. It's, you know, it's kept up with the times, as it were.
That's good. I haven't, you know, so I've seen a lot of those posts, like Dave Goes Windows, and basically all the Medium think pieces about switching to Windows, dropping, you know, jumping ship. And I don't really have feelings, like negative feelings towards Apple, and that's not why I kind of want to do that or get a PC at least. I'm just more interested in the VR thing and like the game dev thing. You keep talking about Unity, it sounds badass. Yeah, I could do it on my Mac, you know, but actually, I don't even know if I could do VR in my iMac. You have to have a pretty...
You definitely couldn't. Yeah, it requires a really beefy...
Yeah, so I mean, that's mostly why. Just kind of, I would like to make more things, and maybe having a Windows will allow me to make more things. So I might do that.
Yeah, I mean, the VR stuff is still, it's still definitely on the pricey side, for sure. But on the plus side, it looks like a lot of the stuff that's going to be upgraded is going to be kind of like piecemeal upgrades over the years. So I believe later this year, they're releasing new lighthouses, which are the little things that track your position in the world. They're releasing an updated version of those, and you can get those separately. So it's like, as things improve, it's going to be like an incremental release cycle. And it's not like you drop $800 on this thing, and then they release a totally new version the next week. Right.
It's like, yeah, it's like buying Mac computers where you drop $2,000 in a computer, and then you, 2 months later, you're like, they're releasing a completely new piece of hardware. It's not, like you said, it's piecemeal, and I'm not really used to that because you kind of buy the thing and then you have the thing. It's kind of like, you know, my MacBook's hard drive just went out, just failed. I've had it less than maybe around a year maybe, and it just did not work. So I took it in, and they couldn't even, with their fancy diagnostic tools, they couldn't even connect to the drive. It was just done. And normally I would be like, cool, sell me an SSD. Let me slap that bad boy in there. But nope, thing's soldered to the logic board. So I have to mail it off, and they have to replace the entire logic board, which is kind of wild to me. I mean, I get like, yeah, you know, you can get a substantially smaller computer, but you have to assume that that's somewhat common occurrence, because when I went in, someone else was there, their hard drive had failed, you know, and they had to send their computer up to you. That's a much more costly fix for Apple.
Right. And I mean, the real thing is you've got a laptop that you're supposedly traveling with a lot, right? Because it's a tiny laptop, and that's what a lot of people get them for. And if that happens in the middle of nowhere, or just... And by the middle of nowhere, I just mean not by an Apple store.
Right.
Or you can't get an appointment because they're very busy or what. Like, this is a thing. Or you're traveling and you can't take your laptop in and have them mail it away and mail it back. Like, that's just, you're nothing you can do in that case. And that's a pretty big bummer, depending on, you know, what kind of backups you have available and what your plans are and all that. That can be a really trip-ruining kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I say I'm in the middle of nowhere, but in reality, it was like an 80-mile drive to an Apple store, and I had to wait 2 days to get an appointment, you know. But luckily, I have another computer, and I feel lucky or fortunate to be in that situation where I can have another computer or I can afford one. So, it was okay, but I just think, like, in the grand scheme of things, seeing other people there, like other college students there, their machines are shot, they have finals coming up, you know, and then the genius is like, got to mail it in 3 days, 3 to 5 days. And the student's like, what am I supposed to do? My notes are on this. My lecture recordings are on this. It's just kind of crazy to think about. But yeah, Windows seems interesting. The piecemeal thing is so foreign, but it sounds, the tinkerer in me is happy, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's one of the things that I'm really excited about the upcoming Mac Pro, that there was the big release, I think a few weeks ago. Daring Fireball had a piece on it and a couple other places where Apple basically brought them in and sat them down and said, hey, here's what the next Mac Pro is going to be like. We realize our mistakes with the trash can. Here's what we're going to do to solve it. And it looks like one of those things is going to be hopefully a lot more flexibility with the hardware that you can replace and that you can swap out on your own and upgrade, which is just, I think that's so great, especially for a pro machine, because you can't always get to an Apple store. You know, and you can't always wait for them to repair it and send it back and forth.
Are they planning on? So I didn't really read into that post. I saw people tweeting about it. Are they planning on doing that with the IMAX more too? Because I remember hearing something where they said that they were going to make higher level IMAX that were more geared towards a professional audience.
I am not aware of anything related to IMAX associated with this specific announcement, sure. But I could have missed something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, so that the Mac Pro is cool and all. It's just so expensive. And if I need something that's super high end, I feel like I could get a Windows machine for way less money. That's even more powerful.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, even if you wanted to run it as like a Hackintosh, that's, from what I hear, fairly doable these days.
Yeah, that's interesting too, because I've seen some Medium posts, medium.com. I've seen some Medium posts about it, Hackintoshes, and it used to be like, wow, this sucks. And now it's more like, hey, this is pretty okay. So it's intriguing anyway.
Right. Yeah. The price of hardware is just so much lower when you buy it direct. It's pretty ridiculous, because you can put together like a very beefy VR capable computer for under $1,000 now, if you get the right sales and you pick your parts carefully.
That's crazy to me. I don't think I've paid less than like $1,800 for a computer in 10 years. It's been a long time. Well, I guess my MacBook, you know, my MacBook was like 15, but still, you know, that doesn't really, it's not comparable. But I don't know. The whole Hackintosh thing now is very interesting to me. So maybe I will end up getting a box and then I'll buy some parts and toss them in there and see what happens. I feel like I'm always going to have a base Mac computer. Most likely that's going to be a laptop, but I feel like I have the ability to be more free, especially in like the tower scene, you know? So if I'm able to put something on a, you know, like run something like a Hackintosh, it's viable. I could probably do that. And then if something goes wrong, I have all my stuff backed up to GitHub and whatever. And I have my laptop, you know, where I can carry on. So I really don't know much about VR at all, besides like I know the name of the Vive and I've put a PSVR in my face. That's it. What other systems are there? Well, I guess I've heard the Oculus too, right? That was pretty famous.
Yeah, yeah. The three big ones right now are the Oculus Rift, and now they're like motion controllers, the touch. And then there's the HTC Vive, which is the system I have. And then there's the PSVR, which is for the PlayStation 4. So the PSVR is by far the most sales. It has, I think, multiple millions of unit sales now for the system, which, you know, makes sense because the PlayStation 4 has a pretty huge install base and the PSVR overall is a lower price. I think it's like $400 for the whole system, not including the PS4, versus, you know, for an Oculus or a Vive, you need a pretty good PC gaming rig and then the headset on top of it, which is pretty pricey. So the big thing with the PSVR, I haven't actually used one yet, unfortunately, but the big thing with the PSVR from what I've read is that the quality of the screens is really great, but the motion controls are kind of the thing that don't really work out so well. Because the PSVR uses the PlayStation Move tracking stuff, which was basically like a response to the Wii, so it's pretty much a decade old technology now. This is stuff that was made for the PS3 to compete with the Wii motion, and so they've upgraded it, and it's definitely better, but there's a lot of judder, and your hands don't really precisely match where they are in VR a lot of times, and you'll kind of slide around as it redetects things. Because that uses visible light, it also has the downside of if you play in a bright room, it has reduced tracking accuracy.
Hmm.
But, you know, a lot of people are enjoying the PSVR, and there's a lot of like more AAA kind of content, just because, you know, Sony has that kind of that firepower to get people to develop for it. So that, I think that's definitely a worthwhile thing to check out, especially if you already have a PlayStation. It can be pretty interesting, but I think it's definitely like a sort of like a different tier of interaction than what you get with Oculus or the Vive, because what you get with both of them now, and in particular the Vive, is just really, really good tracking of where everything is at any given point in time. So with the Vive, it actually uses a laser based setup, and it has basically like a hard drive motor spinning a laser around, it's two hard drive motors spinning two lasers around, one on each axis. Mm-hmm. And the updated Lighthouse design I mentioned a little bit earlier, one of the big improvements is that they've able to put both lasers on a single motor. So it's half the moving parts.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, really cool stuff. And it's just amazing. Like, there's still such huge advancements to be made in the space. That's one of the things I find most interesting, is just that, like, there's massive advancements being made in VR all the time. Like, we don't even really know the best way to move in VR yet in terms of how people get around the world.
Yeah. I've seen some different things, like harnesses. Like, you have a whole platform that you stand on, and it's kind of like a baby walker, it looks like.
Yeah.
And there was one you're telling me that was like a freight simulator or something where you can actually run in place. I probably mixed up two different things, right?
Well, no. So I think you got it right. Earlier today, I actually finally got to try this. It's called the Freedom Locomotion System, I believe. And it's basically a tech demo that this guy has built out. And it's a bunch of stuff just relating to VR interaction and VR movement. And it does some really, really cool things. The big, like, standout feature of it is that it allows you to run in place or walk in place. And based on how much you swing your arms and how much your head bobs, it actually detects, like, how quickly you'd be running and moves you that way in game, which it feels surprisingly good. And there's some other really cool stuff it does, like detecting when your head is inside of an object or your hips would be inside of an object based on the orientation of your hands and head. And if that happens and you walk too far into it, can actually teleport you back and that sort of thing. So it gives you a really, really incredible sense of immersion. And it's just so interesting to be able to watch how those interactions evolve in almost real time, just as people come up with cool new stuff and ways to interact with these worlds.
Yeah, that sounds wild. The fact that, I don't know, it sounds like it's trying so hard to, like, I mean, because you can't actually run. That'd be cool if you could, but
I mean, you can a little bit though. So
right.
In my particular play space, I have about just over 6 meters. So I have like almost 20 feet where I can run freely in the space. And when I get near the border of that, it'll actually show a blue outline representing my physical walls inside the VR headset.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very clever.
So they don't let you just, like, trample stuff. That's pretty cool. I don't know. Like, it seems like I said, I haven't dove into it. I've just kind of glanced from the outside. It seems really cool. But that kind of stuff is blowing my mind, how fast the innovation is happening.
Yeah, it's so rapid. So I originally tried a DevKit 1, an Oculus DevKit 1 that we had at ImageX early on when I got there. And that didn't have any of the, like, motion tracking stuff. You were basically seated for that. And it was just like a facing forward kind of thing. And you can look around, but you can't really move a ton. You can't, like, walk or do anything. And you used a controller or a keyboard and mouse. You actually didn't have hands in the game. And it was cool. And I was like, this is neat. This looks interesting and nice, but it just really wasn't that engaging. And I find even with the Vive, even with the much nicer headset where you don't get the motion sickness and stuff, because that's mostly a solved problem now. When you're just seated, VR, I find, is not all that interesting. For me, what makes it really interesting is the walking around and exploring a space as if you were actually in it. That's what really makes it so much more immersive and deep.
Right. So I remember looking at Microcosm, and I didn't look at it. You sent me a video, and there was a video where you're actually kind of like getting underneath what you were painting, which I thought was super cool. Because at first I was looking at it, and I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, you can paint voxels and stuff. And then you kneel down and I was like, whoa, it didn't dawn on me by looking at it. Cause you look at things in 3D, but you don't assume that you can go above it and below it and stuff.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy how something as simple as, like, a drawing program can become, just a way more interesting and immersive experience just because you're actually in it in three dimensions.
Right. So you mentioned that the motion sickness is pretty much like a solved problem. What was causing that?
So I don't know all the technical specifics of this. And obviously some people still get motion sick. I still get motion sick in certain games, mostly depending on, like, how they're how you move, like what the, how the locomotion works in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So some games will have you like push and press and hold a button to move in a direction, and you just kind of slide around on the floor, which is how, you know, that's how movement works in a lot of normal 3D games.
Right.
But in VR, it tends to make you feel just really not great, really fast.
Sure.
It's like being seasick. But the two big advancements that I'm aware of, specifically from like DK1 level hardware, Oculus DevKit 1 level hardware, to what we have now in the modern headsets, in the current Rift and in the Vive headset, is that the frame rates are always at 90 frames per second, and the display, or always whenever possible. And there are some tricks that both systems have with things called reprojection. I don't entirely understand all this bit of it, but even if the frame rate dips below 90, they can reuse old frames and reposition it based on where your head has moved. It's really cool stuff. But the main thing is keeping the frame rate above 90. And also these new displays have a technology in them where they don't blank out in between frames. So like a typical LCD actually is flashing to black, mm-hmm. Between every frame. And these just leave the previous image there. And so it only gets wiped out when it's replaced by a new image instead of being blanked out. Yeah. And so those were like the two big tech things that I'm aware of.
I would never have thought to think about that. Or, you know, and thinking like, why is this making me sick? Oh, there's essentially black and white flashes happening very quickly. Because obviously, you know, that would take a toll subconsciously. You're just seeing that happen. For me, when I played, because I played the X-Wing game, and so you can fly around in 3D space, I didn't feel sick until I was almost done. And it wasn't even like a sick feeling. It was like the edges of my eyes hurt. Like there was so much light, and the screen covers all of your field of view. So it's just light from every angle. And so it made my head hurt because it was just so bright, I guess. So no, that's really nice to hear that that's not a problem. My brother was like, I just got used to it, you know? But it didn't sound pleasant, having to get used to that feeling.
Right. Yeah, it's a very intense sensory experience. One of the things that a lot of people, including myself, were worried about when these VR headsets were first coming out is like, oh, am I going to get addicted to this? Like, is it going to be too immersive? Am I going to get too sucked in?
Right.
And it's super immersive, but so far, at least for me and anybody I know with a Vive or who's played it, it hasn't really been like an addiction problem. I actually will play normal screen games for longer stints at a time than I will VR games. It's just a lot. You kind of get mentally tired of it after a while.
Yeah, it's kind of like when people first started talking about VR, a lot of people made the comparison to like Inception, the people that lived more in the dream world than in the real world.
Sure.
I didn't have that feeling. Again, I didn't play it a bunch, but I mean, honestly, I don't even know anybody that's been addicted to it either, or has gotten addicted to that feeling of not being in this world, so to speak.
As good as it is already, it's still got so far to go before there's not just so much suspension of disbelief.
Right.
You are constantly suspending your disbelief still.
Yeah. Well, I've talked to a couple of people and I'll like bring up VR and like, well, your life sucked that bad. I'm like, that's not what it's about at all. You're kind of missing the point at that, you know.
That's just a nice opportunity to explore something that you couldn't normally.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which I mean, that's all games, right?
Right. Exactly.
Virtual reality or reality.
Reality, as Elon Musk would have you know.